tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
News. I'm Joe Palca reporting. Iran calls new sanctions illegitimate. Iran's foreign ministry called new U.S. sanctions targeting the country's ballistic missile program illegitimate. Ministry spokesman Hossein Jaber Ansari said Monday that Iran will respond by boosting efforts in its legal ballistic missile program and promoting its defense capabilities. Iran drew condemnation from the U.S. and other Western powers for two ballistic missile tests late last year. They said violated U.N. Security Council resolutions. Iran defended the tests as a matter of national security. The U.S. enacted new measures Sunday against five Iranian nationals and a network of companies with links to banned missile activity. President Obama said his government will vigorously enforce those sanctions against Iran's ballistic missile program, this in the wake of other sanctions being lifted in accordance with the Iran nuclear deal.
Now that Iran's actions have been verified, it can begin to receive relief from certain nuclear sanctions and gain access to its own money that had been frozen. And perhaps most important of all, we've achieved this historic progress through diplomacy without resorting to another war in the Middle East.
For more on this story, visit our website at voanews.com. Afghanistan on Monday hosted a meeting of delegates from the United States, China, and Pakistan on how to initiate direct peace talks between the Afghan government and Taliban representatives. A joint statement issued after the meeting in Kabul of the so-called Quadrilateral Coordination Group said the group discussed and made progress on a roadmap toward initiating peace talks with Taliban groups that reflects the shared commitments of the QGC member countries. The four-nation contact group has agreed to hold its next meeting in Islamabad on February 6th. This is VOA News. The White House issued a sharply worded statement Sunday saying it condemns in the strongest terms attacks in the capital of Burkina Faso that killed at least 29 people and wounded scores more overnight Friday. The statement also warned that attacks of terrorism will not stop the U.S. from helping to improve health care and increase economic opportunities in Burkina Faso. Iraqi police say three Americans missing in the country were kidnapped from an apartment in Baghdad. U.S. officials have said they are working with Iraqi authorities to find the missing Americans, although Washington has not confirmed that they were abducted. Iraqi police officials said that the Americans were taken by gunmen in Baghdad's Dora neighborhood. The Baghdad Operations Command described the apartment the Americans were in as suspicious. The Washington Post quotes a resident describing it as a brothel that is a subject to frequent raids by Shiite militiamen. Freelance Yemeni journalist Al-Mikdad Mojalli was killed Sunday in an air raid by the Saudi-led coalition on rebel-held Sana'a while on assignment for Voice of America. The OA has expressed its deepest condolences to his family. Meantime, Reporters Without Borders says at least five journalists were killed in Yemen last year. Taliban insurgents in Pakistan have claimed responsibility for a roadside bomb attack that killed at least five paramilitary soldiers and wounded several others. Police say Monday's bombing occurred in the outskirts of Quetta, the capital of the volatile Baluchistan province. Taiwan's voters have elected Tsai Ing-wen as their first female president, delivering a crushing defeat to the Nationalist Party. Tsai's independence-leaning Democratic Progressive Party also won a majority in the legislature. Monash University Asia scholar Bruce Jacobs on the election results.
Well, it's certainly a landslide victory. There's no question. It was a great rejection of the government, which had been in power since 2008, and this started during the elections of 2014, the local elections, but it really was a huge landslide victory for the opposition Democratic Progressive Party.
Shortly after results of the elections were announced, China's Taiwan Affairs Office said it would continue to oppose any Taiwan independence activities. British lawmakers debate Monday a petition signed by more than 500,000 people seeking to ban U.S. Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump from Britain. Last month, Mr. Trump, a billionaire real estate developer and frontrunner among Republican candidates, prompted international outrage by calling for a ban on all Muslims entering the United States. The debate, called by the Petitions Committee of the lower house of the parliament, cannot result in any binding conclusion. Joe Palca, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Hees Wu Heeb, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Boko Haram militants not only have taken the lives of more than 1,000 civilians and soldiers in Cameroon, but the government says the country has lost thousands of cattle, sheep and goats to the terrorist raiders. This is a blow to farmers in the country's border areas who are struggling.
That's Moki Edwin Kenzeka reporting from Yaoundé. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Benin President Thomas Boni Yayi vows that West African nations will fight back following Friday's terrorist attack in Burkina Faso. And today, Americans are commemorating the birthday of civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
We'll have these stories plus the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young, music from Sierra Leone, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, security officials in Cameroon report four worshippers died in the suicide bombing of a mosque in the village in the country's far north region today. Two others were wounded. The French news agency says the attack occurred in Gwetchekwe after morning prayers. A young boy ran toward the mosque and set off the explosives he was carrying. Another mosque bombing in a nearby town last Wednesday killed 13 worshippers, including an imam. The U.S. and the U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon have condemned the bombing and called for a comprehensive approach to preventing the terrorism.
Boko Haram militants not only have taken the lives of more than 1,000 civilians and soldiers in Cameroon, but the government says the country has lost thousands of cattle, sheep and goats to the terrorist raiders. This is a blow to farmers in the country's border areas who are struggling. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Cattle rancher Musa Ibrahima has settled with his family and 45 cows along the banks of the River Vina in Goundary in the Adamawa region of Cameroon. The 55-year-old rancher says he left his hometown about 650 kilometers away because of Boko Haram attacks.
No. You think say I feel go for protocol again?
He says he will not return to his town of Fotokol on Cameroon's border with Nigeria because Boko Haram fighters have been attacking and killing cattle ranchers. He says many of the ranchers who were forced by Boko Haram fighters to take their cattle to Nigeria have never returned. Kalbasu Daniel, a lawmaker from northern Cameroon, says at times the attackers disguise themselves as cattle ranchers transporting their cows to Nigerian markets. He says the Boko Haram fighters have been increasingly stealing food and cattle from Cameroonian ranchers and farmers.
Ils ont tué tous les bergers qui étaient partis avec les bœufs là-bas.
He says just last week, Boko Haram militants killed 15 ranchers and their cattle escaped to the hills near Nigeria. He says no one has been able to go and bring back the cows because of fear, and it is lots of money lost besides the hundreds of ranchers killed. Boko Haram extended its attacks from Nigeria to Cameroon 3 years ago after Cameroonian troops began assisting the Nigerian military in fighting the extremists. Cameroon government spokesman Issa Chiruma Bakari says about 1,200 soldiers and civilians have died since then. He says at least 5,000 cows have also been stolen and uncountable numbers killed.
In 2014, 1,160 cattle were stolen from our people by the Boko Haram criminal and barbaric hordes. In 2015, the number of cattle stolen on the Cameroonian territory was around 4,200, excluding small remnants.
Chiruma says although the fighters have in recent months targeted farmers and cattle ranchers, the rebels' ability to strike has been drastically reduced by counter-offensives on their strongholds by Cameroonian and Nigerian troops. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Benin President Thomas Boni Yayi vows that West African nations will fight back following Friday's terrorist attack in Burkina Faso. The attack left 29 people dead at a luxury hotel in Bamako. The French news agency AFP reports that Mr. Yayi flew to the Burkina capital, Ouagadougou, today to show regional support. He says it was not merely Burkina Faso that was hit, but the entire sub-region. He's calling for emergency talks by members of ECOWAS, the Economic Community of West African States. He says Islamist militants are changing their strategy and questions which country would be attacked next. 3 days of mourning were declared in Burkina Faso following the attack.
South Africa is quickly running out of maize as the El Niño drought deepens. Like many other countries in South Africa, South Africa is experiencing its worst drought in decades. As the current crop withers due to extreme heat and little rainfall, food prices are rising and may be out of reach for millions. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
A devastating drought caused by adverse effects of El Niño has left South Africa exposed to a serious food security threat. El Niño is a global climate phenomenon characterized by the warming of ocean surface temperatures in equatorial parts of the Pacific and recurs every few years. The country's water reservoirs are running low and it is left with a four-month stock of its staple food, maize. South Africa's Minister of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, Senzene Zokwana, says the situation is critical and requires urgent importation of maize.
By the end of May, we may be short of white and yellow maize. We'll have to make sure, therefore, that by that time, we have enough maize in stock.
Experts warn that over $1 billion will be required to avert catastrophic hunger for both humans and animals. The World Food Programme said Monday that an estimated 14 million people are facing hunger in Southern Africa, while programmes intended to assist people face critical funding challenges. Botswana says it is experiencing its worst drought in 5 years, with both water and food stocks quickly running out. This Botswana rural farmer, Mutu Imang Mase, says the future is gloom and doom.
Life is very difficult. Not being able to plow, no food for our cattle, no grass, so we are really having a problem.
Zimbabwe has not been spared either. Most crops have wilted because of heat and long dry spells. Thousands of livestock have also succumbed to the drought, with the government already failing to pay civil servants due to lack of funds. Many fear it is a matter of time before they too face the same fate as their livestock. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 14 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Not only human lives, but Cameroon has lost thousands of cattle, sheep, goats to Boko Haram raiders. Benin President Thomas Boni Yayi vows that West African nations will fight back following Friday's terrorist attack in Burkina Faso. And South Africa is experiencing its worst drought in decades. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
British Prime Minister David Cameron says Muslim women in the UK should learn English so they could better integrate into society. The Associated Press says nearly 200,000 Muslims in Britain speak little or no English. Mr. Cameron has proposed a $20 million fund for language classes, saying that speaking English would help ease social isolation and discrimination. Muslim groups in the country have criticized the plan. They say it focuses on the extremist minority rather than the peaceful majority. The British Prime Minister suggested that failure to learn English could be grounds for deportation for some people. In other news, the director of the Jesuit Refugee Service says many migrants are living lives of quiet despair. Katrine Camilleri told the Times of Malta newspaper that migrants feel they have no rights if they fail to attain refugee status. She said they could be driven to extremes. For example, Camilleri said three migrants committed suicide in Malta in the last few months. Meanwhile, Reuters reports that Greek President Prokopis Pavlopoulos says Turkey is not doing enough to slow the number of migrants and refugees coming to Europe. He accused port officials in Turkey of helping smugglers transport refugees across the Aegean Sea. The European Union and Turkey agreed late last year to keep more refugees within Turkish borders. And Germany is warning North African countries it may withhold development aid if they fail to take back those who have not been granted asylum in Europe. Germany has taken a tougher stand on migrants and refugees since attacks on civilians in Cologne and other cities on New Year's Eve. Also, Germany's defense minister warns that advances by Islamist militants in Libya could trigger a new wave of refugees to Europe. Ursula von der Leyen told Bild newspaper that establishing law and order in Libya was the most important goal. It's not clear whether Germany might deploy any troops to Libya to help achieve that goal. Since World War II, it's rare for Germany to get involved in foreign conflicts. Germany took in more than 1 million migrants and refugees last year.
Gambian President Yahya Jammeh says he may reimpose the death penalty, citing the country's rising murder rate. South Africa's Cape Town News 24 reports that Mr. Jammeh indicated he will lift a 3-year unofficial moratorium on executions. The Gambian leader spoke about reviving the use of firing squads while speaking with religious leaders last Friday. No official crime statistics have been released by the government. Rights groups have protested the president's plans. Mr. Jammeh is often criticized for alleged rights abuses. He seized power in a coup in 1994.
Today, Americans are commemorating the birthday of civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He led an historic nonviolent campaign to end racial equality in America. Nearly 50 years after Reverend King's assassination, most agree that African Americans have made significant strides in their fight for inclusion in the American mainstream. However, according to African American psychologist Isaiah Pickens, the struggle continues in new forms. Pickens is founder of Eye Opening Enterprises, a company that seeks to empower inner city youth through storytelling and service. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips from Los Angeles.
Things have changed. Obviously, we've seen a lot of progress in America with more people of color and black people in particular taking positions of power. We have President Barack Obama. What we saw in the past was a lot of what we call explicit racism, where people might get called names or be denied going somewhere. And what we saw in the past from that is a sense of inferiority that came to African Americans. And that led a lot of the young people to not strive for things that they felt were outside of their capability because of that low sense of self-worth. So maybe not trying to be a doctor, not trying to be a lawyer, maybe only thinking about living in certain neighborhoods because they can't live in this other type of neighborhood. Those were some of the main ways that it impacted their behavior in the 50s and the 60s. But as the awareness of this became greater, you saw more young people of color empowering themselves to change the system.
Do kids nowadays have the same sort of inferiority view? And if so, What do they do with that? Is it the same as those days or not?
Of course, you can't speak about everyone in broad ways, but as a whole, we have seen this sense of self-worth increase. What we do see is that when they're in environments where they don't have the resources they need, they feel cheated, and they might find really unhealthy ways to get the things that they need. Sometimes it might involve getting involved with the criminal justice system because they've robbed or stolen from someone, or maybe it's about academics not being the most important thing and focusing on athletics as your way to achieve. So still causing some issues, but in a different direction.
I know that there's sort of a glorification sometimes of sort of the kind of the gangsta, sort of macho criminal music world kind of thing, or maybe that's just my white perspective.
Yeah, what they're really glorifying is power that was taken outside of the system. So you feel like you're an outsider in the system, and you see someone who looks like you who has taken power by getting money, by getting influence, whatever it is, outside the system. And unfortunately, the people that are highest profile with that happen to be in entertainment, sometimes showing this gangster persona. So, you know, I would argue that it's not just about being a gangster. It's about being an outsider who found a way to make things happen. Sometimes the bravado, the aggression, or the things that you see from young people of color is really anxiety about this world that might treat me unfairly in another situation, and as we've seen with police issues in our country, might actually cost me my life.
And yet, in both the 60s and now, for example, there's been some activism. There's been some wholesome channels to try to make some kind of positive change. Could you compare what kids in the 60s did to try to change things for the better and tell me a little bit about sort of the state of play nowadays in terms of their approach?
In Dr. King's day, we obviously saw much of the frustrations of the black community boiling over and going into a couple of different camps. There was Dr. King's camp that focused on nonviolence, which a lot of people bought into because they saw the long-term plan of this. Dr. King really, if you've ever had a chance to hear any of his speeches or read any of his speeches, he was able to frame the conversation about race in a way that I think both looked at what we would aspire to get to while also embracing or trying to embrace everyone, including white people in that struggle. And I think that's what made his message so powerful. But then there were the Black Panthers and Malcolm X and the Nation of Islam who took a less nonviolent approach. And, you know, all of this was expression of a frustration of a society that they felt didn't hear them. And what we see today is, again, this boiling up is manifesting as the police versus young men of color. That's how it's being framed. What we're seeing is a lot of young people doing a lot of what we saw in the 60s, but now using the new tools that are available, like social media, and being able to get a message out in a relatively quick fashion and galvanize people and make arguments that these are issues that need to be talked about. And so, you know, I think that we're seeing the rise of new civil rights leaders who really are understanding the importance of galvanizing people. But at the end of the day, it really involves changing policies.
Interesting. You say at the end of the day, whereas I think that Dr. King would have said there's more of a spiritual basis, and that without that, you're talking about kind of a two-dimensional life.
As a foundation, the spiritual basis is important, but what made Dr. King such a phenomenal activist is that he understood how to move the legal system. When we talk about the Voting Rights Act of 1964 that permitted black people to have the same protections to vote in America as anyone else, he went to Lyndon B. Johnson and pressed him on this issue. And President Johnson didn't want to move on it, but he said, we will not stop marching until this issue changes, because he understood that you needed the government behind you in order to actually enact some of the spiritual things that he was speaking about. And I think a lot of the movements today understand that this is something that's important. So that's why they're pressing for things like body cameras on police officers and external audits when there's a police shooting, instead of that department or that state actually doing it. You need those legal protections to actually enact a lot of the things that you're pushing for. But also, so much of what Martin Luther King Jr. did was speak to our ability to impact other people and to connect with other people. And sometimes we kind of float through life not knowing how we're impacting people or how we're connecting with people. It starts first by being aware and doing something to serve someone else.
That was African-American clinical psychologist Isaiah Pickens. He's founder of Eye-Opening Enterprises, and he's the author of The Dawn of Generation Y. Dr. Pickens spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips from Los Angeles.
In The UN Refugee Agency reports growing numbers of Mozambicans are fleeing fighting between Renamo rebels and government forces. They are seeking asylum in neighboring Malawi. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency reports an almost unstoppable flow of refugees from Mozambique is crossing over the border into Malawi. The agency says its staff in the village of Kapise, about 100 kilometers south of the capital, Lilongwe, so far has registered nearly 1,300 new arrivals, with more than 900 people waiting to be recorded. It says another 400 people have arrived in 16 other villages. UNHCR spokeswoman Karen de Gruel says most of the refugees are women and children who come from Tete province in Mozambique. She says the refugees report fighting between the opposition Renamo and government forces is making life impossible in their home villages.
Refugee women told you, a UNHCR protection officer, how their homes were burned down with one elderly lady left inside to die. They say that government forces are attacking villages believed to be harboring opposition forces and opposition members. We have not been able, however, to confirm the accuracy of these allegations. Some parents also stated that they've been separated from their children during flight.
De Gruel says the UNHCR and government authorities in Malawi believe the fighting in Mozambique, which broke out in February last year, would be temporary. Therefore, she says, agreements were made with the national authorities for local communities to host some 700 Mozambican refugees who had arrived in mid-2015.
In the past few weeks, however, the situation has changed and more people are crossing into Malawi, and we have reports that more people are coming. Malaria is a major concern as there are not enough mosquito nets, and the number of patients seen daily has increased from 70 to 250 people.
De Gruel says several UN aid agencies, as well as the charity Doctors Without Borders, are in hand to help the refugees with food, non-food items, and medical relief. She says the government of Malawi is considering reopening Luani refugee camp, which previously hosted refugees from Mozambique's long-running civil war. That war, which was waged between 1977 and 1992, prompted more than 1 million Mozambicans to flee to Malawi. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is African News Tonight with Kim Lewis. I'm Yehiye Yiswuhib in Washington. It's 28 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to African News Tonight for the latest sports, features, and more coming up next right here on VOA. For the full hour of Africa News Tonight, tune in again at 1800 UTC.
Next on Let's Talk. School life. How did it shape your life and affect your personality? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing school life. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on The Voice of America.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Not only human lives, but Cameroon has lost thousands of cattle, sheep, and goats to Boko Haram raiders. Benin President Thomas Boni Yayi vows that West African nations will fight back following Friday's terrorist attack in Burkina Faso. And today, Americans commemorate the birthday of civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Coming up, we'll have music from Sierra Leone. And in our feature segment, Kenyan schools for the blind adopt new technology that provides material in an audible form. I'm Kim Lewis with Nehaeus Wuyi, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA. Sports with Sunny is next. And of course, it's time now for the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. Happy Monday, Sunny.
Happy Monday, Kim.
Well, Sunny, I understand you're kicking off with African football.
Kim, let's kick off in Rwanda, where early round group action is continuing at the fourth African Nations Championship football tournament. Our VOA football fans will remember this three-week tournament is for locally based players in Africa. So European-based stars like Manchester City man Yaya Toure are not eligible. In Monday's opening Group C match in the capital, Kigali, Guinea got a late equalizer to draw 2-2 with Tunisia. Alseni Kamara scored the vital goal off a corner kick. Kamara also scored Guinea's first goal in the 39th minute. However, there are now concerns about his health after he was carried from the pitch with about 3 minutes left in the match. Ahmed Akachi scored both of Tunisia's goals. Meanwhile, Cameroon and the Democratic Republic of Congo both won their opening matches on Sunday, as we hear now from Mark Ouma.
Striker Yazid Emane Atuba scored through a first half free kick to hand Cameroon a 1-0 victory over Angola in an Orange African Nations Championship tie in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of the Rwanda capital Kigali on Sunday. Earlier at the same venue, Guy Lucidiso, Heritier Luvumba, and Meshak Elia each found the back of the net as the Democratic Republic of Congo outplayed Ethiopia 3-0 in the other Group B tie. On Saturday, defender Emery Baisenga scored to enable hosts Rwanda edge Ivory Coast 1-0 in the tournament opener before Gabon and Morocco played to a scoreless draw. Consequently, Rwanda head the Group A with 3 points.
Thanks, Mark. That's Mark Ouma of our Daybreak Africa radio show, which you can hear Monday through Friday on The Voice of America. On Tuesday, Group D will be in the spotlight at the African Nations Championship with two matches in Gisenyi, Rwanda. Zimbabwe plays Zambia in the first match of the day, and that will be followed by a game between Mali and Uganda. Zimbabwe advanced to the semifinals at the 2014 African Nations Championship in South Africa before losing on penalty kicks 5-4 to eventual champion Libya. Reporter Michael Cariotti in Harare says the Warriors of Zimbabwe are confident of doing even better this time around in Rwanda.
The Warriors have been in high spirits since returning to camp after the Christmas and New Year holidays, and coach Kalisto Pasua has promised that they are not going there to make up the numbers, but to win the tournament.
We're going out there to go and have a good result. We're not saying we're going there out, to make numbers. We want to do better.
Captain Adlife Direkwi also believes the Warriors will go far in this tournament, but adds that to make their dream a reality, they first have to win their opening game against traditional rivals in neighbor Zambia. Zambia, on their part, are not taking things lightly and have recalled their 2012 Africa Cup of Nations winning captain, Christopher Katongo, who will lead a youthful side in their quest for another continental title. Katongo, who has also played in China, has now joined Zambian club side Green Buffaloes after a spell at Absa Premiership side Bidvest Wits, and revealed He wants to achieve something new with the Chipolopolo. The Zambians have built their team around only five of their top clubs, Power Dynamos, Zanaco, Zesco United, Green Eagles, and Green Buffaloes. However, football fans are backing Zimbabwe to steamroll over the Zambians. Isaac Maheya, a member of the Zimbabwe National Soccer Supporters Association, is one of them and says he's certain that Zimbabwe will come out tops. Another of Zimbabwe's football followers, Mayor Makunike, refused to predict the outcome of the match but said the Warriors will have to fight hard for victory. Although Captain Danny Piri is home injured, Zimbabwe has called probably the best locally based players available, including Ronald Chitio, Edmochi Rabadare, Ocean Mshure, Knox Mtizwa, Rafael Manuvire, Joao Ngozo, and Elvis Chipezese. Apart from Zambia, Zimbabwe are also in the same group with Mali and Uganda. The top two teams from the group qualify for the quarterfinals. Reporting in Harare, this is Michael Kariati.
Remember me? This is the old sports emperor with a red-hot listening tip. That's right, give a listen to my pal, the bright and lively sunny man on the sunny side of sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. Dr. Larry Zamoja here, Chairman, Chief Executive, Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM. Keep getting sporty sunshine with Sunny Young. We all do at Sports Radio 88.9 Brila FM, broadcasting out of the cities of Lagos, Abuja, Kaduna, and Onitsha in Nigeria, as well as the World Wide Web on www.brilafm.net. I tell you this. It's always a thrill, yes, a thrill, to remain on the sunny side on Brilla with Sunny. Keep listening, Africa.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
They're playing basketball. We love that basketball.
In women's basketball, national teams from Australia, Argentina, Venezuela, and host Brazil help christen a new Olympic basketball arena in Rio de Janeiro over the weekend. The teams participated in a test event at the freshly inaugurated arena, which was built at a cost of $195 million. The facility is a permanent installation within the Olympic Park, and it'll be used as an Olympic training center for top athletes after the games. While the 16,000-seat arena was officially closed to the public during the women's tournament, a small number of invited guests cheered as they enjoyed the basketball action. Australia's star guard Aaron Phillips won a gold medal at the 2006 World Championships in Brazil and a silver medal at the 2008 Olympics in China. Aaron gives the new stadium high marks.
You know, it's very bright, it's vibrant, you know, like I said when I walked in here, I was like, wow, this is a really cool arena and cool stadium, so I like the vibe that I get when I'm here. The floor is fantastic, you know, it's a probably good to play on it, like practicing on it. I think it's very has good spring in it. Overall, I think it's a great court.
As we look forward to Olympic basketball and other sports in Brazil, I want our Voice of America listeners to mark their calendars. The opening ceremony for the 2016 Rio Games is August 5th. In pro basketball, the five-time NBA champion San Antonio Spurs remained unbeaten at home Sunday when they routed their Texas rival, the Dallas Mavericks, 112-83. LaMarcus Aldridge, San Antonio's prized acquisition in the offseason, led the Spurs with 23 points. The Spurs are a club record 24-0 at home to open the season, and they've won 33 games in a row at their AT&T Center Arena since March 2015. Overall, San Antonio now has a record of 36 wins and 6 losses, matching its best-ever start after 42 games. The Spurs did have some bad news, though. Star guard Tony Parker left the game against the Mavericks late in the third quarter because of right hip soreness. The same injury forced Parker to miss 2 games at the beginning of January. Meanwhile, the other NBA club based in Texas, the Houston Rockets, exploded past the Los Angeles Lakers 112-95. Star guard James Harden, who sports my favorite beard in basketball, fired in 31 points for the Rockets. In Sunday's other NBA results, the Oklahoma City Thunder stormed past the Miami Heat 99-74. The Minnesota Timberwolves easily beat the Phoenix Suns 117-87. And the Denver Nuggets edged the Indiana Pacers 129-126. Turning to tennis, the year's first Grand Slam tournament, the Australian Open, officially got underway on Monday in Melbourne. The defending champions and pre-tournament favorites Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams both won their opening matches in straight sets. Serbian star Djokovic defeated South Korea's Haiyan Chung 6-3, 6-2, and 6-4. And American star Serena Williams won her opening match, beating Italy's Camila Giorgi 6-4 and 7-5. Our VOA tennis fans will remember Serena and Novak dominated tennis in 2015. They each won 3 of the year's 4 Grand Slam tournaments. Taking a quick look at the top seeds in Melbourne, number 3, Roger Federer, number 6, Tomas Berdych, and number 7, Kai Nishikori also won their opening matches on Monday. On the women's side, number 4, Agnieszka Radwanska, number 5, Maria Sharapova, and number 6, Petra Kvitova all won their matches and are through to the second round. Australian Open tennis underway down under. G'day, mate. G'day. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhib and Kim Lewis. G'day. G'day, Kim. G'day.
G'day, Sonny. G'day. And thank you, Sonny, for listening to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Fridays, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 hours UTC right here on the Voice of America.
Coming up, Kenyan schools for the blind adopting new technology. And next, replacing destroyed school equipment in South Sudan. But for some music, here is Fulani from Sierra Leone with African Children.
Fulani Future in Apocalypse, smoke, smoke. Ella, Ella, Black, Black. Get up, yo, get up. For the children, yo. History.
I and I, my brethren, born in Konoko, Du Town, Sefadu, 15 Bangwa, Sri Land of Golden Diamonds. Me, my man, they're many swear, Papa moved to the city of Freetown. Reside at 45 regions to Bambalato, within another Yalabodos, by the bridge, so hungry, at night, long must Arata go, it's on number two, though. Hello, they go, but when morning comes,
me go feel pain under me foot, though.
Hello,
African children cry.
To work 6 months every other morning.
Touch pocket filled with water, pan we head, me neck and back, paper fire. Body up in pain, feel sick. Membrane insane. After we go memorize the only Quran, read our Bible. Go to school, hot mentor. Teacher go beat we for timetable, Lord.
Jesus Christ and little children are like the kingdom of God. We don't turn we back from we begin them. Not to their fault. You can kick an old man for what he is, but you can't kick a young thug. Bad bush not effort to where we begin them. Children should be educated, nourished, healthy. Them life go flourish. For our children are the future. It takes a village to raise a child. The valley of a shed is not known until he cut down the tree. I said, Fulani said,
One Africa, one unity. One
black people,
one
destiny.
African children cry, please stop your crying.
Keep your head up.
The African children cry, please stop your crying.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your crying.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your crying.
Please keep your head up.
Danko fai
danko
alawadi barki e bengure ya danko ne
danko
danko baba alawadi barki e aduna ya yeah what
he man wale jange jule yo
keep your head up
he man wale jange jule yo
keep your head up, never give up. Even though the position you in got you fed up. Work hard and get your bread up. Anything is possible if you put your mind to it. Rise up and be a leader, my brother. We need more love than hate, my brother. Stay focused, stay strong. Making moves in the early morn. Gotta get my hustle on. No more poverty, no
look
more
at the
struggling.
Youngins are dying, mothers are crying. Keep your head up, even when the world is lying. With time flying, pain it ain't no denying. We're strategizing, we're analyzing. Burn dirty, so my life I'm sanitizing. With tears from children crying on the ground, breath is lying. Never had a chance to let life and living trifling. Left beside that was right or wrong, and they don't know.
Amen. Wale, Jange, Julio.
Trying to plant my dreams in your mind and watch them grow.
Watch them grow.
And watch them grow.
One Africa, one unity. One black people,
one destiny.
African children cry, please stop your crying.
Keep your head up.
The African children cry, please stop your crying.
Keep your head up.
African children cry, please stop your crying.
Your head up.
African children cry, please stop your cries.
Please keep your head up.
Fulani from Sierra Leone with African children.
Well, until recently, blind and visually impaired students in Kenya were still using Braille books for their studies. But Kenyan schools for the blind are now beginning to adopt technology that provides material in audible form and in the process expands their opportunities. Lenny Ruvaga reports from the town of Thika.
17-year-old Lucas Mwanzio intently searches the internet for information. Today's class is on biology. Mwanzio is visually impaired and for the last 2 years has been attending computer classes at the Thika School for the Blind. Mwanzio is in eighth grade, having started school at a later age because of his vision. He says that technology has opened new frontiers that were once inaccessible.
Braille books are quite expensive and you have to use quite a sum to purchase one. But now, since we have computers, we get the books at virtually no cost. So we download the various books to read, and when we are done, we just close the program.
tukona computer.
The school embraced assistive technology 6 years ago, enabling blind and visually impaired students to access information from computers and iPads. Zachary Mwasia, one of the school's teachers, was born blind. He has been teaching the students how to use the technology for about 2 years now. He says the technology presents opportunities that can level the playing field for his students.
Assistive technology equip learners with very many skills that really make them independent in life. They can read materials like books, magazines, or newspapers by themselves. And apart from that, it also assists them to acquire the employable skills.
The assistive technology costs $1,000 for a school to install, but an NGO called Enable has provided it to the schools at no cost. Peter Okeo, the program manager at Enable, says blind students using the technology may still face challenges when they move to higher education.
When learners move from primary to high school and then to universities, they go to university and then they realize that there is no that technology. So the fact that they learn technology in primary and high school, when they move to higher to university, they go back to Braille, which is now another challenge to them.
So far, 4 out of Kenya's 11 schools for the blind have adopted the technology. Enable says it will provide the funding for the remaining schools to come on board. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Thika, Kenya.
In Bor, South Sudan, fighting between government and rebel forces in 2014 destroyed a lot of school equipment at the John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology. But today, students and staff now have a reason to smile because a group of lost boys living in the United States have donated more than 60 computers to the school. Jacob Ashik has the story from Bor.
After fighting spread from Juba to Bor in December 2013, the town changed hands between government and rebel forces several times. During that time, the university's building and properties were either looted or destroyed. Not one functioning computer was left on campus. 2 years later, a staff and a student here are grateful for a donation of 63 computers from Lost Boy, now living in the United States, who hail from Greater Bor area. The university's deputy vice chancellor for administration and finance, Professor Robert Deng, says the computers will tremendously boost education at the university.
We are going to put 30 in the computer lab. We'll take 10 to the library, 5 to the staff offices, and then 5 to the 5 deans, 1 to the office of the deputy vice chancellor, and also the office of the academic secretary will also put 3 in the office of the deanship of the students.
For the last 2 years, the university's administration had been keeping record manually after all of the school's computers were destroyed in the fighting in earlier 2014. Deng says some university's professors traveled to the U.S. in June to ask for help. During that visit, he said the professors met former lost boys from the Greater Bor area.
They paid the money for buying them and for transporting them. And we have now received them. We're going to assemble them in our new computer lab.
David Malualawor, Dean of the University College of Education, says the computers will help students conduct research.
You cannot talk of quality education without you doing research. And now research is impossible when you don't have internet service. So with internet, as you could see there now, computers as well available, our students will be able to use the computer lab, and of course we'll be able to improve our capacity, especially in teaching service.
University student Philip Dengong, who is studying for a bachelor degree at the College of Management Science, says it's not easy to study without computers for the last 2 years.
It was very terrible for us to get some research, like if you want to do assignment, it is very difficult for you. You can come to town and you face some money in town. But now it will be very simple. We should be in our computer lab, so we shall continue with our studied.
Deputy Vice Chancellor Deng thinks the 63 computers would have cost about $2,000 if the school had to buy them. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
An editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
On the third Monday of each January, Americans honor the memory of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Dr. King, a Baptist minister from the southern state of Alabama, was a leader in the U.S. civil rights movement, advocating social change through nonviolent means. On January 15th, he would have celebrated his 86th birthday. Believing that change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle, Dr. King organized and participated in mass action boycotts, sit-ins, peaceful marches, and other nonviolent acts of civil disobedience. Dr. King once stated that an individual who breaks a law that conscience tells him is unjust and who willingly accepts the penalty of imprisonment in order to arouse the conscience of the community over its injustice is in reality expressing the highest respect for the law. And so, activists sometimes deliberately, but peacefully and respectfully, broke laws aimed at segregating the white citizenry from the non-white, thus hoping to bring attention to the inherent unfairness of such legislation. Thus, when a black seamstress named Rosa Parks broke the law in Montgomery, Alabama, by refusing to give up her seat on a bus to a white passenger and subsequently was jailed for her transgression, her plight generated national attention and increasing sympathy for her cause across the country. Dr. King was 39 years old when he died by an assassin's bullet on April 4, 1968. But his legacy lives on. In the fullness of time, segregationist laws were repealed. Discrimination is a legally punishable and punished offense. And even as we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr.'s life and enormous contribution to society, Barack Obama, the first ever African-American U.S. president, begins his seventh year in office. I never thought in my lifetime that I would see one of us aspiring to be the head of our nation, said Martin Luther King Jr.'s eldest sister, Dr. Christine King Farris. Mr. Obama leading us toward the presidency is like the promised land for us. Dr. King's life is well summed up in his own words. The quality, not the longevity of one's life, is what is important.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.
Next on Let's Talk. School life. How did it shape your life and affect your personality? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing school life. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa. Next time on Straight Talk Africa. Peace talks between the Burundian government and the opposition groups have been postponed, with no word on when they may resume. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss the crisis in Burundi. That's next time on VOA Africa.